You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. Join me as we uncover the rich histories of North America's Great Plains, exploring the latest archaeological discoveries and past cultures that shaped this storied region. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. I am your host, Professor Carlton Schildschief-Gover, and I am excited to have you join me as we investigate the rich and fascinating histories of North America's Great Plains. For episode 26, we have Chance Ward. Chance is a close friend of mine. We went to school at University of Colorado Boulder together, where we met. And Chance is currently the NACRA coordinator for the State of Colorado and Office of the State Archaeologist, and as well as an enrolled member or tribal citizen of the Cheyenne River Sioux. So excellent. Thank you so much for being on, Chance. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thank you for finally having me on. I know we rescheduled this a couple times by now, but excited to be here, ready to chat with you.
Excited to have you on, and I know you're incredibly busy with the work that you're doing, so it's no worries, just happy to have you. So real quick, so you are the state NACRA coordinator for Colorado. What does that job entail on a daily basis?
Yeah, so when I was hired, I kind of was very looking narrow, you know, based on the job description that I was given. I kind of thought I would come in and strictly work on NACRA work, you know, that's identifying human remains, cultural items within our collections. It's kind of what I just thought it was, organizing tribal consultations and things like that. But now that I've been in the job for coming in on 2 years already, it's much, much more than that. A lot of the work by my predecessors was done well as far as the collections, identifying and removing human remains or items that may have human remains incorporated into them. But one thing I didn't realize then was that half of my job was also in the office of the state archaeologist. And we still get emails and phone calls from a lot of the county coroners in the state. And that's usually the general public or private citizens that decide to clean out their garage, attic, storage unit, grandma and grandpa's closet, and find boxes of human remains. And it's always because, you know, there's kind of a common stereotype to it now. It's always grandpa was a avocational archaeologist in the 60s and for some reason had these ever since then. Or, you know, dad was a collector of Native American objects, and these were in a collection they purchased. And that seems to be the more common coroner cases that we get. But in addition to all that, I get to organize tribal consultations with the TIPOs and tribal representatives of the 48 tribes that Colorado acknowledges. So it's a lot of communication, a lot of phone calls and emails and text messaging. And, you know, it's really getting to know who they are. It's not just a quick email and then wait 6 months for a response. I follow up and I email a lot. I phone call a lot. I just kind of cold call and say, hey, I'm Chance from History Colorado. And who's your NACRA representative? Who's the TIPO? You know, just trying to get to know them. Are you going to be in Denver anytime soon? You know, or if I'm traveling in their direction, you know, I'll try to make that time and space to kind of meet them and get to know them. And it's been really fun, I think. And I don't mean fun as in laughing, but fun as in I really enjoy being in this role. I really enjoy being able to work with Native people, with tribes, serving them because I'm from one of those communities myself. So I feel like I can treat them the way they deserve to be treated. And I'm glad that I'm here.
Absolutely. And your background, you got your undergraduate in anthropology from Fort Lewis College in Durango.
Yes.
You worked CRM, cultural resources management, worked for a while. And but you also worked for the Southern Ute, like TIPO or NACRA office for a hot minute.
Yeah. Yeah. So after I graduated from Fort Lewis, I was working at Home Depot over the winter and spring. And I thought I should really try to use my degree and get a job with it. So I applied to a couple CRM companies kind of in the Cortez, Durango, Four Corners area. And I submitted a few applications online. And the next day I got a phone call from Woods Canyon in Cortez, if anybody knows them. And they asked me to come in for an interview. And, you know, once I did all that, my manager at Home Depot, I kind of had to approach him and say, hey, I got an opportunity to use my degree and get a summer job. It's not permanent or full time. It's probably going to be seasonal, but I would really like to try and pursue that. And he was great. He was a great manager. I was a little sad that he left the store I was working in, but he said, yeah, of course, this is what you went to school for. You know, we'll put you on short term leave of absence until you're ready to come back. And he basically let me do that every summer while I was living in Durango. But yeah, I did four years of CRM and, you know, thousands of miles of walking survey lines and a couple excavations. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very important to have a native person or a native voice on a team, on a crew. And I was usually the only native person. And I thought it was important to try to provide my perspective, my voice in any way I can. And I don't know if it made a big difference or not, because I didn't really hear or see anything or didn't know where the report was going afterwards. But I think that's what kind of gave me that little push to want more and do more. I want to be more impactful. And that's why I ended up eventually applying to go to grad school, so that I can be in a better position to make a difference.
Absolutely. And your work in education has been so centered in Colorado for basically a decade, from working with Utes or Ancestral to Colorado, but also during your master's in museum and field studies, working with Will Taylor and a number of tribes on the horse research, as well as going through collections there. And as well as, you know, the Lakota, also all the different Lakota groups being part of that 48 nations with ancestral ties to Colorado. Like, even before this position, it seems like you built up a lot of reputation and work with communities that you now work with. So how does your current work in NAGPRA connect you? Well, not really connect you, but how your position works with tribes connected to Colorado lands.
Yeah. And hearing you ask the question, I realized I kind of went on a tangent on the last one, and I completely skipped over working at Southern Ute. But while I was doing CRM work, and those of you that have done it know that sometimes it's working for a set amount of days, and then you get a certain amount of days off. So with Woods Canyon, we did 8 days in a row, right? We got all 80 hours in just a day over a week, and we usually got a few days off in between the next project or the next session. And that was kind of the time I thought, I need to fill in these 3 or 4 days in with something. I didn't want to just be sitting at home and waiting to leave on the next project. So I actually applied to work with Southern Ute's TIPO office, and I kind of got that connection there through Garrett Briggs. And I think just working and living around Durango area, you, especially in archaeology and anthropology, you kind of meet these people that are in that field anyway, whether it's through classroom or consultations or anything to do with, you know, archaeology in the area. It's a big area for Southwest archaeology. So I ended up meeting people like Garrett Briggs, Alden Naranjo, and Cassandra Tencio, who eventually all three were the TIPO of Southern Ute at some point in their lives. And so I like to think I kind of got to learn from them in person, and kind of helped me understand what a TIPO office should do or could do. So I'm grateful and thankful for that experience. It was kind of during COVID lockdown too. So I spent a lot of time in the office in Ignacio by myself, and sort of learning to read documents and Section 106 notices and TCNS numbers, and trying to help build their digital database of mail that was coming in. I was the only one there, so it was really piling up. And eventually people got to come back to the office. So it was a really, really good experience. I thankful that I got to meet those people and work with them and learn from them. And now I can't remember what you asked next.
No, you're totally fine. I appreciate that. So, you know, how does your, how you work with tribes connected to Colorado lands in your current position, right? You have 48. Mm-hmm. And then also, like you said, dealing with requests from the public who have discovered human remains that may or may not belong to Colorado.
Yeah. So I think one of the things I wanted to do when I first came in was I wanted them to know that I was here, because there was some time off, or there's kind of a gap of somebody in the position from the last person to me. So when I came in, I wrote a 2-page introduction letter of myself. And I kind of started out with, you know, this is who I am, where I'm from, where I grew up, the sort of cultural and tribal values that I grew up with, and what it means to me to be in this position. And I kind of ended it with, you know, the more Western stuff. And I went to school here and served in these different roles over the years. And I sent that to all 48 tribes, or 51. I guess it's 51, because a couple of them were kind of forced together. So like MHA is one, but if you count it as three, same with Cheyenne and Arapaho, it comes out to 51. So I think getting that out to them, to the TIPOs, trying to understand who the TIPOs are, if they have a NAGPRA representative or not. Some do, some don't. Some have tribal archaeologists, some do and don't. So that's kind of where it really began, with reaching out and contacting them, getting to know what their staff and their office is set up. You know, some have 2 or 3 staff, some have 10 to 15 and do their work really well. So being able to know who they are, and then a big part of it was understanding their connections to Colorado, to what we call Colorado. And that's through treaties, land rights, executive orders, acts of Congress, and really getting to know what parts of the state or what parts of Colorado were they ancestrally part of, right? And that's a lot were probably roaming up and down the Front Range, right? Colorado's a very beautiful place, but it also has the plains, and I'm sure there was lots of game and buffalo and things like that. Then you get into the mountains. So really understanding the history of Colorado, the history of the tribes and their relationship to Colorado, which hasn't ended, right? Just because they're not here now doesn't mean they still don't have a connection to the area. And I think understanding that part of it was really important, because before moving to Colorado, I had no idea about the history and relationship of tribes in Colorado. So I definitely had to educate myself on history, tribal history, because I'm from the middle of South Dakota, so my world is the Lakota world.
Right. Well, excellent.
Still is. Thank you very
much. Well, all right. And we'll be right back after these messages. We'll reconnect with Chance, talk about what it's like being Lakota, but serving all, you know, 51 nations with historic ties to Colorado. We'll be right back. All right. And we're back with Chance Ward here on Great Plains Archaeology Podcast, episode 26. So we really wanted to dedicate this segment for Chance to talk more personally about the position, what it means to be an Indigenous person, a citizen of Indigenous tribe, working in this role as a steward between these ancestors and their objects with all these different communities. So what does it mean to you to serve as NAGPRA coordinator as a citizen of the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe?
It means a lot. You know, first of all, I'm the first Native person in this position, in this role with the state, and it covers the entire state. History Colorado also has 8 community museums spread out across the state, so I'm technically their NAGPRA person too. So one of the things is having them sort of go through their own internal collections and items they may have to let me know, but so that I can combine and relay that information to the tribes. But it means a lot to me to be here. You know, it's like I kind of said in the first segment, is that it's important for me to make a difference and be more impactful. And I really wanted to work with tribes. Even if it's not my tribe, I think I want to help make a difference for all Native people. And eventually, I hope I can do that directly with my own tribe. It's a little bit difficult when you don't live near them and can't really participate in much other than maybe phone calls. But I think one of the big issues I learned over my educational journey is that in these colonial fields like archaeology, like museums, is it's usually done by non-Native people. You know, it's kind of that stereotype of old white guys with PhDs and, you know, they do all the interpretation on their own. They hold Native people in black and white in the past, which is why Native people are usually in Native, or not Native, in natural history museums. And I understand the issues that go with that and how it's important for Native people to be considered still alive in modern contemporary times. And I wanted to be part of that. So I think being here, I really want to be able to pride myself on treating tribal reps, TIPOs, elders, the way they deserve to be treated. And that's by bringing them in, consulting with them from the very beginning at the concept stage, not this old-fashioned way of asking them at the end or just wanting quick approval of something. So we really, here at History Colorado, you know, we really want to do it in a good way. I don't know if it's the right way, but it's, to me, it's the best way that I know how at the moment. And that's bringing them in person. We pay for just about everything. And that's, you know, hotels and flights and mileage and honorariums and taking them to lunch and dinner and, you know, really building that relationship and getting to know who they are out, even outside of the work we're all doing. And I think it's really, and it's really fun. It's been really fun getting to know them, and it's really easy. And I think being able to grow up in my community where I did in South Dakota, it's just really natural and easy to get to know them because they're just like any other family or friend or relative that I grew up with. There's no, but you know, the humor, understanding the humor, the issues that kind of occur on reservations, and then being able to understand the issues that museums have, people in the archaeology field have with Native people, that I can kind of be that voice that's sort of in between both sides, right? The Native side and the non-Native colonial side, right? I don't have to be either or, I can be both because of who I am as a person. And I really enjoy being that. If I can stand up for tribes and Native people and TIPOs in this work, I would love to be in the room and help advocate for their voices to be heard. And I'm a little bit regulated to just in Colorado at the moment, and I don't want to, you know, overstep or insert myself, especially understanding things like tribal sovereignty and me not being a member of their tribe. So it's in my mind all the time, knowing that there's issues out there. But, you know, I stay where I am unless I'm asked. And
absolutely. And I'm sure that's helpful for tribes knowing at a state level they have someone that they can relate to and identify with working in this meaningful way as a shepherd and conduit between a really emotional and impactful, law is not the right word, but like context when it comes to NAGPRA repatriations. And kind of with that said, like, I imagine it's like, it can be very complex working with dozens of tribal nations who all have historic ties to Colorado with competing claims. I mean, one of the nice things, you know, like looking at Colorado as a case study, you do have pretty clear, like you mentioned earlier, clear differences in geography of like the eastern side of the state, which is Great Plains with one very particular material culture. You have the Southwest, which is, you can tell instantly the difference between like a Southwest pot and a Plains pot, and then a lot of mountainous region, which is pretty well claimed by a few tribes. So you kind of have these three very distinct ecological zones that do kind of come with their own cultural material. But that said, Like, what happens when there are competing claims or shared claims? You know, what's it like navigating that? And if you're able to, has there been an experience where your own nation or one of your relative Lakota nations is in conversation with other tribes regarding, you know, who takes authority over a claim?
Right. Yeah. And I just thought of, you kind of sparked my thoughts when you were asking these questions, but something I didn't add to the previous question was when bringing tribes in too, you know, for consultations or just visits to our museum, I think one of the things that I think of or that I do is I also consider the cultural and spiritual aspect. And what I mean by that is when tribal folks come in, I try to let them know that there's these items here or NAGPRA items or even things like human remains. And I try to let them know ahead of time. And if they want me to do something different, and I will, I will do whatever they want me to do to help make their visit better, more comfortable, even if that means having things ready, whether it's sage, sweet grass, cedar, things like that. You know, you and I did the interview for Natalie's thesis on workplace safety for Native people, right?
Yeah.
A few years ago. And that's fresh in my mind because I talked about that earlier today with a potential paper, a planned paper to write. So I think one of the big things there is knowing what's needed, knowing what to get. I had a previous experience where a non-Native museum professional was asked to get sweetgrass, and they did. And when I saw it, it was not sweetgrass. I don't know what it was, but it was green and braided, which is, I assume, where the problem, or not the problem, but where the confusion was, but definitely was not sweetgrass. And, you know, for things like that, I'll call ahead of time. I'll ask ahead of time and say, if there's anything I can do before you get here, let me know. If I have to buy things, rearrange things, move things in or out or off site, I will do all of that because I want you, I'm considering your feelings, your emotions, and I want you to be okay while you're here visiting. And I don't know if many other museums take that into consideration or not. I hope they do. I'm sure there is. I haven't experienced them in that context yet. So in my experiences here so far, I have not had any issues with competing claims, which I'm a little bit thankful for because I have gotten to know many of the tribal reps and TIPOs. I consider them friends now, and I don't want to cause any issues or issues between them or issues with me because we know each other, you know, almost like a family grudge or something. So I'm very thankful that no one has had any competing issues. What the experience so far has been a lot of consultation and trying to figure out where ancestors are from. Tribes can provide their evidence, whether it's, there's 10 lines of evidence in NAGPRA. So as long as it's one of those 10, we can take it into consideration. So in consulting with everybody, you know, one tribe may claim somebody, and then the other tribe will, I'll relay the information, what the plan is, and they'll say yes, but, you know, they'll support it. They'll defer, support. But I have not run across any disagreements or counterclaims yet. I understand there probably will be at some point. And I'm willing to take that on and help as best as I can. I'm not afraid to run into anything. It's just that'll be a new one. So happy to gain some of that knowledge and experience around that.
Yeah, in my limited experience, like I'm not as involved in NACPR nearly as you are, especially not at a state level. Like I'm adjacent to the NACPR process here at KU. Mm-hmm. But it really, tribes seem to take care of these discussions behind closed doors between themselves and not in front of institutions or non-community members.
Right. Yeah. See that too. So one of the things that also occurred here was during a consultation, they wanted to do a executive session, right? Which is usually when, usually hear that around like council meetings when they want to discuss private things without the public getting to hear. But yeah, letting them hash it out in the executive session and get the answer right then and there, you know, let them talk it out and figure out what the plan is, right? There's no need to try to pit them against one another or anything like that. So that's a good way.
Excellent.
Good way.
So unfortunately, we ran out of time, which I knew it would happen. I'm learning very quickly. Like all the folks I've had on the podcast so far for interviews, 30 minutes goes by quick. So I'm definitely contemplating maybe doing an episode where there's like a couple of us, like me, you, Tyrell, and maybe somewhere else where we just like schedule an hour or an hour and a half and we can just talk and chop it up into different episodes.
As like yeah, a whole that'd
series.
Be fun.
We'll see. But any final reflections from you, Chance? And how can listeners learn more about Colorado's NACPR program or ongoing work by History Colorado?
Yeah. So we have a webpage, which was missing a NACPR page all these years. if they did have one, it was difficult to find or yet to search something very specific. And for some reason, NACPR wasn't the keyword there. So I helped one of our web designers add a NACPR thumbnail to our archaeology and preservation page. And there's a little bit of information there on some of the things we do in Colorado. But other than that, that's it. I get a lot of research requests or a lot of smaller museums that email me and ask for advice on how to even start the NACPR process, or how do they know we have items subject to NACPR? And
fair enough. So have you been hit by the Lego competition requests yet?
Lego? No, I don't think so.
Okay. Be prepared. So I guess like this year's STEAM competition for robotics this year is archaeology themed. So they're asking these groups across the country to develop a project on archaeology with Lego robotics. And my email inbox today has been blasted with people, all the like school teachers all across the state. I'm like, what is going on? So
they're coming. Just Kansas?
No, it's a national thing to the point where like the Iowa office, state archaeology office, has now a webpage dedicated to this thing stating like, do these steps before contacting us. It's because I was like, because at first I thought it was like, oh, just the school district. So I said yes to one, and then I kept getting more, and I was like, oh, this is national. Anyways, now I'm detracting. So we'll put that web link on the episode description. Would you like me to put your email address in the episode description? Or
yeah, you can put my email. You can put my LinkedIn. I try to use my LinkedIn as like a official NACPR voice. So
fair enough.
I try to post some fun but helpful and interesting things.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Chance. It's been a pleasure to have you back on the podcast. Well, I guess have you officially on. I think we ran your episode from A Life in Ruins a couple weeks ago. I'm so happy to finally have you here on Great Place Proper.
The one we talk about the Spice Girls and
all that. Yeah, that's right. That was a fun one. All right, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at Pawnee_archaeologist, and you can also email me at greatplainsarchpodcast@gmail.com. And remember, anybody can love the mountains, but it takes a soul to love the prairie. American author Willa Cather.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.